Chapter 3. Never sell people what they need. Your role is not to save the world. Here is one big clue to the success of the masters in the selling game. They understand this instinctively. People do not buy what they need. They buy what they want. Many salespeople dedicate their careers to fulfilling their customers' legitimate needs. Keep on doing so, and you will bruise your head against a concrete wall. What do we mean by the word need? It is a present lack that has negative future consequences if not filled. I need to have a balanced diet containing minerals and vitamins. If I do not, then my future health is in jeopardy. You need to have insurance. If you do not, then sudden catastrophe can lead to economic ruin for you and your family at some point in the future. You need shoes on your feet, or they will hurt as you walk. All these examples are true and they're good, but under the surface is a trap into which many salespeople fall. They tell themselves that the sales profession is beneath them, unless, of course, they are doing something of great intrinsic value to the human race. This is often true for those who are proud, and sometimes for those who are highly educated. It is true for those who think that the sales business is done by lower life forms that do not compare to the more elegant business creatures. In order to feel justified in their selling jobs, in order to feel like one of the more elegant creatures, these salespeople excuse away their sales work by convincing themselves that their work is really important because it addresses vital needs that customers have. Do you see the emotional rationalization there? Here is the trap. When you begin to focus on the inherent needs that your product or your service addresses, your sales approach, your language, and your attitude all change to reflect that focus. Your presentations are practical, they are logical, and they go directly from problem to solution. The customer is likely to agree with you and still not buy. The trouble is, people will postpone fulfilling their legitimate needs, but they will buy what they want right now. Your customer may say no to your selling proposition, even though the answer really should be yes, based upon the customer's need. Here's an example. Joe presented his health supplements to Mary. He told her about all the deficiencies of our present-day diet and how many people suffer diseases as a result. He talked about the depletion of minerals in the soil that grows our food. He was very passionate about avoiding artificial preservatives and ingredients in packaged foods products. He showed Mary how healthy she could be if she just agreed to the supplements that he was selling because they could enrich her diet with this natural product. Mary was in agreement. She admitted to being guilty of eating junk food and of not paying attention to her health. She knew that she needed to do something or that she would eventually suffer from some kind of disease. She was even grateful that Joe was taking the time to bring all of this to her attention, and she resolved to making the needed changes. Joe was certain that he had found a new customer. However, she made some excuses about not having the money right now, and at that moment she told him she needed to run to get to an appointment before she was late. Mary was guilty, and she was concerned about not doing what she needed to do, but she reserved what money she had to do the things that she wanted to do, not what she needed to do. Consider this and remember it well. People worry about their needs, but spend money on their wants. This is not to suggest that needs and wants are always different. Sometimes they're the same. However, until needs become wants, people do not buy. Now, it may be argued that a certain woman who has cancer and gets chemotherapy does so because she needs to do it. After all, if she doesn't, she believes that she will die. On the other hand, if you show her a dependable alternative treatment that bypasses the painful, questionable chemotherapy, she is very likely to choose the alternate instead. In other words, What makes her choose chemotherapy is not a need for it, but a want or a desire to feel healthy and to avoid the mortal terror of cancer. That want could be addressed by different products or different services, of which chemotherapy may just be one option. The conclusion is that the fulfillment of needs is not pursued until they become wants, or they are surrounded by wants that are very compelling. By the way, it is important to say the following. The argument is not that when you present people with solutions to their needs, they will never buy. Clearly, some do buy. The ones that do so are those whose needs and wants just happen to intersect at the time when you make your presentation. Present jogging shoes to a man on the day after his doctor tells him that he's going to die if he doesn't change his lifestyle and get some exercise. And guess what? He's most highly motivated to buy what you sell right now. His need has suddenly become a want. Here is a critical point. Average salespeople get average results. Why? Because they depend on the circumstances of their customers matching exactly with the benefits that they offer at the time when they make the offer. They depend on hitting at the right time when their prospects are very conscious of their needs and they're just begging for solution. They're waiting for the right place and the right time, such as showing up with their jogging shoes the day after someone has been diagnosed with serious health effects if the person doesn't exercise. When they get to that right place and right time, the sale is very easy. That scenario works occasionally, and a sale is made occasionally. The masters know how to convert needs to want at the time that the offer is being presented. This is a critical concept. Customers are motivated to buy, and the sale is made more often as the masters consciously convert needs to wants at the time of the presentation. Let us say, for example, that you're trying to sell mineral and vitamin tablets to a man who needs a balanced diet. Imagine that your product is $30 per bottle. Your prospect has $30 left to spend in this example, but he plans to use that money to buy a DVD movie and some snacks for enjoyment during the upcoming weekend. Unless his need for minerals and vitamins becomes an immediate want, he will rather watch a movie and eat snacks on this particular weekend. On the other hand, if you are able to help him convert the need to a want, to feel great desire for your products, then he is more likely to postpone the movie event, purchase your products on a credit card, or find the extra money in some other way. That same logic works for insurance, for shoes, and for any other product or service for which people have a need. Let's get into the head of the buyer and examine some of the conversations that reflect wants. These are examples of the internal dialogue that makes people spend money. Here's what they're thinking inside. That sounds so good. I want one. I can't afford to say no to him. I want us to get along and be friends. He's such a good guy. She's right. I deserve it. Why not? I work hard, and I should take care of myself every now and again. Wow, that would make me look good. My friends would think I'm cool. Oh my goodness, what am I doing to myself? I don't want to die early. I owe it to my family to stay healthy. My boss would think that I am smart if I made this deal. After all, I want him to know I'm no dummy. He can make my life a living hell, and it's good, therefore, to impress him. She's telling the truth. If I died today, what would my children do to survive? I am really selfish, and I don't want to feel like that. A life insurance policy can provide security for them. Each of these statements reflects either a want or a converted need. Sometimes the want is so whimsical and so feelings-based that there really is no need behind it. Can you explain the need behind a desire to smoke a popular brand of cigarettes? Explain why a small person needs to order a supersized meal at McDonald's. Is it an intrinsic need or a want that leads people to buy the $150 Nike instead of the $50 brand? In your selling situations, are you conscious of what your customers need, or are you conscious of what they want? Are you the savior of mankind who comes to fix their situations, to cure their ills, and to make their problems go away? Take a hint. Some people don't even want their problems to go away. Call them irrational when they say no to your perfectly useful solutions. But have you ever considered what they want? Have you given thought to how their needs can become wants so that your perfectly useful solution can become relevant? So, how do you help your customers or your prospects to convert a need to a want? How do you construct your sales proposition in the thoughts and languages of desire so as to appeal to the buyer? Converting needs to wants. First, it is necessary to understand the operative differences between wants and needs. Second, apply the principles to your own products and services. Let us begin with number one, understanding the differences between needs and wants. We will examine two critical distinctions between needs and wants as we are using them in this process. One, needs have future consequences. That is, before they are converted to wants. Wants have present or immediate appeal. Two, needs are logical and factual. Wants are emotional and they're based on feelings. Let's consider the first point. I once allowed several weeks to pass as I neglected the need to organize and clean up my backyard. I'd been too busy to stop and to address the situation right away. And then I realized that I only had one day before my backyard picnic, and I would be very embarrassed to have my guests see me as such a slob. Suddenly, cleaning the backyard was no longer a need. I wanted it clean right now. Within 3 hours, a rake was bought, old bushes were pruned, trash was removed, and the old wheelbarrow and loose plastic were gone from my yard. Now let's examine the second point. Salespeople who are average or below average use logic and facts to convince their potential buyers that needs should be addressed and problems solved. There are buyers and purchasing agents across the corporate world who see 3 to 10 sales representatives every day, and they are bored stiff with all of the charts and graphs and bullet points that flow across their desks. If you specialize in an abundance of PowerPoint slides that present facts and figures alone, you may be missing the active ingredient that makes the sale. What is that? The active ingredient is emotions. As we saw before, people buy based on feelings and emotions, not by logic and facts. Remember, you never sell to a company or an organization, you sell to people. Facts and logic are important, mainly to validate and support and affirm the buyer's decision that it was right. A woman goes to a clothing store to buy a $50 dress, and she ends up buying the chic, sexy goddess of a gown that costs $250. Why? She was seduced by it. She feels the pleasure of wearing it. She wants it, and it wants her. When she walks away with that expensive symbol of seduction, she then uses facts and logic to justify her decision and to confirm that she made the right choice. After all, it's worth every penny because the fabric is strong imported silk. The dress is unique, and she is less likely to embarrass others at the party by showing up in their dress. The style would be attractive for years, so this one purchase eliminates the need to buy 2 or 3 other dresses in the future. This buying mechanism is true not only for aesthetic products like clothing and cosmetics. It is also true for more practical categories like automobiles, tools, and sporting equipment. In the example above regarding the messy, disorganized backyard, notice that it was the combined emotion of self-esteem, image and social acceptance that made me deeply desire to purchase the rake and get rid of the wheelbarrow and clean up my backyard. I could not afford to be embarrassed in the areas of my self-esteem, my image, and my social acceptance. Let us now move on to the principles and their applications in your products or services. There are a number of ways to apply the learning that we just discussed. A, selling stories. B, taking refuge in relationships. C, the language of pain and pleasure. And D, multimedia motivation. We begin with A, selling stories. When you want to persuade others, facts do not make the sale. Stories do. People can relate to stories, anecdotes of real-life situations that exemplify the points being made. A friend and a business partner of mine taught me something that will be helpful for you to remember and practice. Facts tell, stories sell. A good story captures the imagination and the emotion of the audience. If the object lesson of the story supports the thing or idea that you are selling, it will help move the hearer to making the decision that you want. Instead of just presenting your facts and figures, tell a story and make the point. Then support it as you need to with data and with analysis. Do this again. And for the next major piece of content, just tell a story, make the point, and support it with data. When you get an objection during your presentation, do not bombard the customer with explanations and more facts and figures. That is what traditional corporations teach their salespeople to do, and they get traditional, regular, average results. Instead, tell a story of somebody who used your product, had it work for him or her, somebody who is using it right now without problems, somebody who had a shipping problem and had the problem resolved within 24 hours, or whatever is necessary to address the immediate question or problem that the customer may have. Tell a story and make the point. Be specific when you're telling stories. Use names and cities and dates to add realism and credibility to your story. I have learned to answer by saying something like this. When asked by a customer to answer some question or objection, the answer is, "I don't know. All that I know is Susan bought one, and then she called me last Thursday, and here's what she told me, ... fill in the blanks." Okay, do this exercise. Make a list of the key products and services that you sell, or maybe the one service that you represent. 2. Think carefully about all the stories, the real case studies, and the situations that surround success and failure with each product or service or with whatever it is that you represent. Make a list of all the stories and the case studies and the anecdotes about somebody who used your product, how it produced results, and anything that could be used later on to persuade others to think favorably of you, of your company, or of your offer. 3. Choose the most persuasive story for each service or product. Practice telling each story and make sure that you tell it very effectively. Stories should illustrate customer satisfaction, referrals that you receive, how people live better, longer lives, how Rover the dog lived 4 more years, how Nancy lost 153 pounds, how Pee-wee's stamina and performance improved, and so on and so on. 4. Keep this list of stories with you on an index card or on your computer or your PDA. Use it as a prompt during your next few selling presentations, those stories illustrating the realism and the attractiveness of what you offer. And finally, 5. Day after day, as you encounter different people and sales situations, add stories to your list where appropriate. Tell the most persuasive story, sell the most, and get the glory. Even failures can make powerful points of persuasion. In other words, you don't have to remember just the good things or the good stories. The negative ones can make a great point so long as there is a turnaround in the storyline and it does not end in failure. Here's an example. Imagine saying this to your potential buyer. "Kristen decided not to buy from me, because I failed to show her a demo of the product. When she saw a good friend with the product and she was able to touch and handle it, she was so impressed that she called me and bought a dozen on the spot. However, I lost 3 months of sales that cost me $2,100 in commissions. If only I had shown it to her a couple months before. I will never make that mistake again. Take a look at this. See just how good it feels in your hands. Let's go on to another application. We just got done talking about selling stories, A. B is refuge in relationships. One of the predominant emotions affecting a buying decision is whether or not the buyer likes the seller. In a marketplace jamming with competition, if you have any reason to dislike the person with whom you are doing business, you simply go on somewhere else. I cannot overemphasize this fact. You must be pleasing to the buyers. At the worst, you must not be displeasing. If you are, you will not eat, and you will not pay light bills, and you will not purchase new clothes, or at least not with the pay or commission from the present sales endeavors. This principle applies broad scale, whether the buyer perceives the seller as a person, a brand name, or a company identity. If I dislike the vacuum cleaner salesman or the vitamin sales lady, the chances of my buying are almost zero. If I dislike chain XYZ, I will not shop there unless it's 3 a.m. and XYZ is the only store open to sell me my emergency tablets. Now, being likable does not mean that you have to be fawning and ingratiating, pretending to be someone other than yourself just to make a sale. It may simply mean being polite, kind, and gracious. It may mean speaking and acting professionally as befits your industry or your business. It could mean getting rid of personal quirks like spitting tobacco juice or picking your nose while your clients can see you. Here's an important way to be likable. Do not rush to the jugular to make the sale. Develop a relationship with the buyer or customer. When appropriate, spend some time. If Sarah is your buyer, find out about her family. Ask about her hobbies and special interests. Find out what she loves and hates about the job. Invite her to lunch every once in a while. Remember her birthday. Send her an article of interest just for her information with no strings attached. The next step is critical if your business requires customer retention or repeat sales. Write down what you learn every time you interact with that buyer or potential buyer and keep a record for future use. In your subsequent conversations, revisit what you talked about before and comment on it. For example, how did your daughter like the tongue ring that you bought her last week? Or, I couldn't wait to hear the rest of the story. Did your mother-in-law think it was funny when you gave her the denture adhesive for her birthday? In addition, tell your customer something about yourself outside of the normal business context. Talk about your children, your pets, the things that you like to do, and so on. Not too much, but when the buyer knows more about you, the feelings and the emotions surrounding the buying decision are directly affected. Relationships count everywhere in sales. My business associate, Joshua Shaffron, once told me that if you want to make big money on the internet, you must develop a relationship with the people on your customer list. Knowing that the list is so long and there's no way to meet everybody on the list, not even half the people, I asked with curiosity, "What do you mean? How can I do that?" He instructed me to write to them conversationally, tell them about myself, ask about them in ways that make them realize that I care. Keep a list of what they bought in the past and occasionally ask them to make comments. His techniques on relationships in this medium are so many that I can't share them all with you right now, nor do I even know them all. But he's an expert who has made massive incomes on the internet selling to customers who feel like he knows them and that they know him. Why are relationships such a strong refuge for the high achiever in sales? It is very easy for a buyer to say no to a brand or a company. It is very difficult to say no to someone who makes the buyer feel good. That's about as simple as it gets. This year alone, hundreds of millions of dollars of business will be done on the golf course. Network marketers make six-figure incomes at times by asking their friends to do them a favor and try the products or services offered. Preserving the friendship, the association, or the goodwill with the buyer is often more important than even the product or service being offered itself. I have bought products from a salesperson I like, although I knew at the time that I could get the same product elsewhere, probably for a lower price. If you want to increase your effectiveness, your income, and the enjoyment of your sales role, go beyond just being a salesperson. Develop relationships that are mutually beneficial to you and your customers or your prospects. Sometimes when nothing else is working, or when the competition gets aggressive, you can take refuge in the relationships you've built. The masters understand and leverage this fact well. So can you. Application C, the language of pain and pleasure. Do your buyers want your products or services? How do you help to convert your buyers' needs to wants? Wants that can be addressed by your products or services. Here's how. First, recognize that the primary reason why needs can be postponed is that their most positive or negative effects are in the future. Therefore, your skill at helping the prospective buyer bring those future effects into the present will determine how urgent those needs become. When the needs are urgent, they become wants. When they become wants, people move to satisfy them, and so are more likely to buy what you sell. The purchasing agent who buys soap for a grocery chain has a need to achieve his volume and profit goals in order to keep the boss happy and earn the available bonuses at the end of the quarter. If the purchasing agent says no to the volume building promotion that you're trying to sell him today, that's okay. The final tally or the final measure of his performance won't be done for another couple months. He doesn't have to worry about it right now, as there's still time in the future to achieve that goal. Your most effective approach is to help the purchasing agent visualize very clearly the pain that will result if he misses the goal and the pleasure that will result if he achieves it. Immediately, you then show the product or program that you're selling and how it will cause the purchasing agent's business to grow and contribute to that pleasure or help avoid that pain. For example, imagine this conversation. Hey, Joe, I know how miserable your boss gets when the numbers are below target at the end of the quarter. Bosses can be a pain, can't they? I know mine can. Now, you and I can do the best that we can given the market conditions, but is that enough? No. Somehow we are expected to do miracles every quarter, whether the market is up or down. Don't you feel like that sometimes? Pause. Gosh, last quarter, my buyer at another chain on the east side of town missed her number and her boss behaved like she had kidnapped his firstborn child. The poor woman was stressed out for a week, just trying to justify why she didn't achieve the target. Well, Joe, your business is very important to me. When yours does well, so does mine. And so I want to do something every day to help you make your target for this quarter. Just imagine that by the 30th of June, your numbers have outperformed all the other buyers in the department. When the quarterly recognition party takes place, you will be walking tall. When you see yourself just strutting up on the stage as the number one performer for the quarter, how will you feel? I just wish I could be there with you. I have two programs that are designed to help you do just that. Today, I want to show you the first one of them. Next month, we'll launch the second one. Here's how it works. And then you present it. Oh, one more thing. Will you promise me that when I work my butt off to make the program successful in your stores, and your sales take off as we expect, and you get the big quarterly bonus, you'll give me some of it? And you laugh. I'm just kidding. Okay, so let's wrap up with the timetable and the next steps. In that conversation, can you hear the seller making visionary statements to bring future results and circumstances into the present? Do you hear the language of pain and pleasure that induces the buyer to experience the outcomes as if they were already happening? So far, you haven't even presented the exact idea that you're selling. the efforts given to setting up your presentation is sometimes more important than the actual content of the product or service that you're selling. If the context is not right, the content becomes irrelevant. Notice that in the example we just described, the tactic taken was to transport the buyer to the future. Recall the statement, for example, when the quarterly recognition party takes place, you will be walking tall. That can be very effective, but there is another approach to consider and to use when applicable. You can also help your buyer transport future events back into the present. So here's an example. Joe, imagine that you know right now that you never have to worry about money again when you retire. You stop working and your family has a stream of passive residual income coming in whether you get out of bed or not. How does it make you feel right now knowing that? Let's address a couple of caveats. Clearly, there are more factors to consider in these examples. Obviously, the abilities, the communication skills, and the credibility of the presenter will determine how willingly the buyer follows the lead to travel ahead and experience future consequences or confront future results right now. Also, if the content of the program being presented is not strong enough to fulfill the vision that's painted, the sale is unlikely to succeed. However, we assume that these caveats are properly addressed and provide no barrier to making the sale. When that's true, then the approaches work very well. Apply this scenario to your own business. You may not sell to a corporate buyer. You may sell directly to customers and end users. However, the principle remains the same. Can you see how the above example can be applied to your customers? Do these exercises. Construct a scenario for selling life insurance to a family. It will be good for you, even if you're not in the insurance business, because it will help you practice the concept. Now, the father realizes that he needs the coverage, but he's young and he believes he will get around to it one of these days. 2. Construct a scenario for selling health supplements to a friend who simply feels no pressure at all to decide right now. That is application C. Transporting people into the future or bringing them into the present with the language of pain and pleasure. Let's move on to application D, multimedia motivation. When confronted with information to buy something, people decide in many different ways. Their decisions influenced by auditory, visual, and physical cues. Most salespeople sell using auditory cues primarily. They speak. Some use visual cues that are often limited to slides on a screen or pictures in a presentation folder. The physical is the least used. Showing the buyer samples of a new product, letting the customer touch and feel a couple samples of the actual cell phone, or allowing the lady to smell the perfume, all do the same thing. They allow the customer to get additional sensory information and confirm that the product is desirable. The more of these cues that you can employ in your selling presentation, the more motivated your buyer will be to consider your offer seriously. This knowledge is often missed by the more academic salespeople without street-level instincts. The street-smart salesperson understands this instinctively. I was in Mexico City when a jewelry peddler approached me, trying to sell me a gold watch. He insisted that I put it on and try it. I would be amazed at how heavy and solid it would feel on my hand, and how good it would make me look. I didn't want to try it on, but as he kept insisting, I thought, you know what, let me try it on, say no, and then get rid of him. Guess what? When he put it on my hand, it did feel great. I kind of liked how it looked on me. I started to visualize myself wearing it with my blue shirt. In fact, the only reason I didn't buy the watch was that I didn't trust the source. It could have been stolen. It could be fake gold that would turn brown in a week. It could look good, but it could lose 15 minutes every hour. But as you can see, the technique is effective so long as the seller does not lack credibility. Now, in your case, If your customers know you and credibility is not an issue, you can get even better mileage from presenting your offer in a multimedia manner. Utilize the sensory effects of product demos, wallboard illustrations of your concepts, photographs of the products, videos of satisfied customers, or having your key buyer actually take a tour of your company facilities. All these sensory impulses combined with the right presentation and information can make a huge difference in your sales numbers. By the way, if your offering is not a product, but a service, don't think that physical product demos don't work for you. Let us say that you're selling insurance. You can show a beautiful picture of a happy family that no longer needs to worry. How about audio or video testimonials from satisfied customers? You can show a photocopy of a $1 million policy that one customer signed last week. Here's another example. Let's say you want people to join your network marketing company as business partners. By so doing, they can become part of a multinational company and they can earn commissions from various countries. Don't just tell them that. Get a US dollar bill, a Canadian dollar, a Swedish krona, EC euro, British sterling pound, German marks, French francs, Japanese yen, and Mexican pesos. Something from each of the major countries in which your company operates. Now, lay them out, all of these notes on a table, and ask your prospects to examine and identify them. Then, invite your prospect to learn how she can get paid in all of those currencies simultaneously while still keeping her day job. Wouldn't that grab more attention and more imagination than a merely verbal presentation? Multimedia motivation may not work in all situations or with all products and services. However, where it is possible, it will increase your likelihood of getting positive attention in a world where potential buyers are bombarded with myriad options for products and services. Remember, it is the age of virtual reality and instant gratification. People want to see it, to feel it, to smell it, hear it, touch it before they buy it. They desire to have an experience with your products and services before they say a final yes. Therefore, apply multimedia methods to create the desired experience and your sales will improve. In conclusion, here's the bottom line. If you desire to increase the rate at which you sell your products or services, this approach is critical. Reorganize your traditional approach. Avoid the attitude that you are in business to solve the problems of the world. Sell people what they want. Don't convince them of what they need. And for those who really need your products, help them convert those needs to wants and to immediate desires. Tell stories that sell. Build relationships. Find the sources of people's pain and offer relief. Motivate people with multimedia experiences of sights, sounds, feelings, and smell where possible. Selling effectively requires that you understand how people work on the insides. If you don't, your best attempt to quote-unquote save the world will prove futile. The greatest human accomplishments were not born of practical need, but of deep, burning desires.